Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
David, welcome to the podcast, brother.
Yeah, man, good to be here.
For everybody listening, David is part of the reason I'm in this business. He almost hired me and then didn't, but...
I'm an idiot.
That's right, you blew it. But man, you've been, I've looked up to you for a long time, and I wanted everybody who listens to be able to hear from you and your practice. Obviously, I know your personal journey and story, which we might touch on, but just even professionally, you're doing stuff that most people, you know, hope to get to, or they'll hear when I intro you here in a second, like, how is that even possible? So I'm going to press on David today, and he's going to reveal to you that he's actually just a person like the rest of us. And, we can all be successful, and hopefully kind of unpack for us, like, how did he get there? What challenges did he face? Cause you've done some big stuff, brother. All right. Quick intro. Yep. David is one of the top Raymond James advisors in the country. Has been that way for going on 10 years now, has written a book, runs a podcast, heavily involved in nonprofits. I don't know. You've been to the moon twice. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, everything was true except for the last one. But man, you've done a lot at a young age, and I know you get a lot of recognition and accolades for that. Forbes list all the time. For me, if I were to go back in time as a young advisor, like when I originally met you, that you can feel almost distant. Like, man, there's no way I could ever be that guy. It's hard to understand how he got there and did all that stuff. So if you could kind of at a high level, just give us like, what got you in the business? You have a CPA background, but
yeah,
what's been the journey so far to get to this point?
Yeah, great question. I started off, always knew, like, in my teen years, I thought I wanted to be a stockbroker. Didn't know what a financial planner or wealth manager was. So I thought I wanted to be a stockbroker. Went to college, figured I'd get my CPA because that seemed like, okay, well, that's a good universal type of knowledge to have. Went that route, joined a big four accounting firm, and did that for a bit, hated it. Great experience, grateful for it. But after like a year or two, I was just like, I was just missing the personal experiences, clients being these corporate entities that wasn't fulfilling to me. So I knew I wanted to help people one-on-one. I also thought at 23, 24, who's going to listen to me that has millions of dollars, this kid that's just out of school. So my goal was to be a CPA, maybe till I was 30 or so, then get the CFP, whatever. After 2 years, I was like, you know what? I'm 24 years old. I think I was 25. I saved up maybe 30, 40 grand. I was like, I'm just going to go for it. So I'm going to get my CFP, found a place in Nashville. I was dating a girl at the time in Nashville. I was like, yeah, Nashville's good. I lived in Memphis. I was like, I'll try Nashville. And I was like, I'm just going to go for it. I've got my 30 grand. I'll live off of that. And I'm just going to give this thing a whirl. Life's too short to wait, you know, to do this accounting thing. And, that's what I did. And I've never looked back. There's been a lot of look back points along the way. There was a lot of roadblocks and blessings and hardships and stuff along the way, but very thankful that I did it. And I do know, like, it was where I was supposed to be. Not necessarily the success level, but the balance between the left brain and the right brain, helping clients, having a relationship, talking about goals, behavioral finance, psychology, the stuff that we'll talk about later. I think that sets a good advisor apart with the CPA stuff, doing the actual choosing funds and looking at standard deviations and all that stuff that I'd go crazy if I had to do it all day long, but I enjoy it to a certain extent. So it's a good mix for me, whereas accounting was all left-brained.
Where was the entrepreneur spark? Like, did you think, hey, I'm going to own a business someday and do this? Did your family own businesses? Like, or did you kind of happen into it and then realize I actually like doing this?
Yeah, I was kind of an alien in my family. My parents always said, because like I was 8 years old, I was hustling baseball cards, like, you know, setting up little tables in the neighborhood and selling baseball cards and trading them, kind of like my way of stocks when I was eight, when I didn't know what a stock was. Then at 12, I started a yard business, knocked on doors, put up flyers on light poles, asked for referrals. I just kind of, that was just in me. So I naturally did that. And for me, my story was my parents had, they were, I'd say lower middle class, but I was an athlete. I'm not built like an athlete as much as like a Sten is, but I played sports, and I remember just the feeling of wanting like the Nike Air Jordans, but my parents couldn't afford that. And so I was kind of like, I started cutting yards. I was like, wow, I made $50. I can go and buy the cool soccer cleats or whatever. So for me, it was like a way to, I enjoyed that autonomy. And then what it represented, it gave me some freedom that I didn't necessarily have financially. And then that was the start of the entrepreneurial kind of spirit. And then that led to cutting yards, building that business to maybe 80 or 100 yards through grad school. And then I sold that business not for a lot of money, but sold it to a guy to help me through grad school and stuff. And so I had that in me. So I thought ultimately I wanted to do that as a financial planner, but I didn't know really what the industry looked like. So we can talk about that. I started kind of like you did at a bigger firm, with the goal being one day to do what I'm doing now.
Yeah. I feel like I have a relationship with you that I don't have with anybody else based on what we went through from a past firm we were at together. I've learned that there's no perfect firm. I've also learned that jumping firms is not the answer to problems. You know, anybody listening, we could all be really successful at where we are right now. The answer is not to leave. But yeah, we were both in a position where we got to get a front row seat to, hey, here's the things we don't want to do. And the tough thing was, it was right. Hard to exit for both of us. Yours was a much more difficult exit than mine. But I got to watch you in a season of life where I always saw you from a business standpoint, because we got to work in the same firm. But then also seeing you as like an entrepreneur handle like changes in life, the emotions of it. What have you learned about yourself? Because I think as advisors and entrepreneurs, we sit in like a constant tension of, hey, today's great. Hey, today sucks. And that can wear you down. What have you gone through with all of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question and a loaded question. We started, I'd say a couple of things, like, you know, grateful for all my experiences from the accounting I didn't like, from the first firm we were with, that I'm grateful for the opportunity because it got me into the business, but also there were definitely some lessons learned there. There are some tough lessons learned, of things I would advise people not to do with certain contracts and structures. What I went through, that exit that you referenced, was the hardest couple of years of my life. It also shaped me into the man and the advisor I am today. I didn't realize it at the time, but it definitely has. I'm grateful that I went through it, but I would also, like you, coach people on how to maybe do it a different way. Mm-hmm.
How did you manage your business through that? Because I'm sure there were days where you're like, I don't want to go to work, but clients.
There were days on my hands and knees. I mean, and you know, this is getting really under the surface and vulnerable, but like, I can't do this anymore. This is so hard. Not the business, not clients, but being hurt by an employer or being just feeling lost. And like, now it's you trying to save this business and you're going through legal stuff. And it's just like, I was in my early 30s. You're just like, dear God, like, please, I don't know. Like, am I not supposed to be doing this? Take this from me. If I'm like, what am I missing? Am I not being a good steward, or I need help? There were a lot of days like that. For me, it was in me, as far as I'm a driven person and I don't like to give up, but there were definitely times I thought about maybe I can't handle this, but I knew during that season, if I didn't buck up and step up and push through, I would lose all of the clients that I hadn't built to that point, because if they saw me as, he's unstable, he's taken a 1 year sabbatical, people just, it's their money. They're not going to wait on that. They're going to move. They've got a Merrill Lynch buddy at church or whatever. Everybody has somebody else they know that does what we do. Yeah. I knew that window of time. I had to swallow it and just go with it. So it took a toll on me, but I'm so thankful that I did, because every lot of bad days in there, but then you'd have a day where two clients would find you and look you up and say, hey, we miss you. We want to be your client again. And you'd get a little bit of 2% confidence more and kind of start rebuilding the tank over a couple of years. I don't know, in a lot of ways, I don't know how I made it through, but I'm so grateful that I did. And yeah.
Yeah, I think I appreciate you sharing that. I think at times, and I see people that are successful, and I create excuses on that it was an easier path for them, or, you know, they must come from money, or there's some reason that they have attained something I have not. And that was kind of my young advisor, until the more advisors I've met at your level, it's challenging for all of us. Some of their stories just have gut punches in it, but there's this resilience that's required that I almost think if, and this is what going through some challenging times in my life is that the goal is no longer like peace or no challenge, because that'll never really fully come if you own a business and you work around the stock market and you have a life
way of putting it.
With people. It's almost learning to say, like, I just handle it better now. Like I've trained myself to kind of sit in chaos without as much fear, because this is just
And I learned, I came out of the other side of that chaos. And I remember this feeling of fear before. I remember feeling like it was done. There's no way. And I made it through, and there was another chapter. So you can lean on that and say, I will get through this as well. It's going to be hard as heck, but maybe it's less hard if you're able to dampen the fear even 20%.
Yep. So with all that, to keep growing your business and stay at the level you are, practically speaking, going back to young David advisor, what are the things that you wish you would have known? Because I still meet a lot of advisors that they enter the business, I'm just supposed to work hard every day and call a lot of people, and hopefully someday it works out. There's kind of like a lack of a path to success. So what do you wish you would have known?
Yeah, a couple of things. One I'll hit on is I think if you're a little bit younger than me, when I started 20 years ago, the business was a little different. And I think the normal path, I think, was you went to like what you and I did, or an Edward Jones or wherever, or Merrill Lynch, and you got a phone list. You just called, cold called, knocked on doors, whatever. Went to, I was doing like CPA tax seminars at the library and bringing Subway sandwiches, just putting free lunch and learn. And I had two people show up, and you did that you're just doing anything to talk to people, right? Yeah. I think now a days the business is different, and I would advise somebody, I think the way to get started in the business is you find a me or a you or somebody like us, and you go to them and say, hey, Sten, I'm a hard worker. I'm disciplined. I love your practice. I love what you're doing. I want to be you when I grow up. Mm-hmm. I want to make your life easier. I will bust my tail for you. What can I do to do that, and then to also be really successful along the way, and you mentor me? That's what I would do. The David now, if I was 20, I would go and to a you, and I would convince you that I'm about to make you be able to work 10 or 20 hours a week, and I'm going to be your succession plan. I'm going to blow your mind. Wow. That's what I would do now. Back then, it was just hustle, grind. I think now I'm not saying people can't do it the way you and I did now. You certainly can. I just think it's a little archaic, a little more inefficient, because people don't. You can't really cold call anymore. The perception of that is just, it's a little cheap looking compared to, it's not as sophisticated. I don't know. I'm sure there's some brokerage firms that disagree with me. I think it is the team model, the wealth management model, and it's going to an established advisor and getting reps with their clients early on. And then the other part of that was choosing the right culture and signing or not signing the right agreements.
Yeah.
So having the conversation, I'm talking about non-competes, non-solicits. Some of those are okay if you understand what the exit looks like. So I'm 25. Hey, Sten, all the things I said before, I'm going to make your life easier. I'm going to do all these things, and just give me a year or two, and then I want to be paid accordingly, but I'll work for whatever, cheap, for a couple of years. I'm going to show you. And then I would say, hey, Sten, also, so what happens if I'm with you for 7 or 8 years and I do everything I say I'm going to do? And I crush it. And I bring in, now I have $100 million book I brought in on my own. Plus I'm managing $500 million of your book. Can we talk about what that exit looks like? Mm. Making a prenup for your, Sten, you obviously have to protect yourself. Like, I can't just come in and disrupt your business, but also, and you and I learned the hard way, it doesn't need to be like, I leave and now all of a sudden I can't be in the business. I'm going to sue you. I'm going to try to, like, all your clients are my clients, even though I'm like, Sten, but this was my neighbor and I did this from the tax seminar. You've never met this client. Yeah. I would have that conversation, and we could go, that could be a whole other segment, but I would structure that protects you and also protects me. And I've done that in my practice because I went through it. I know how to have those conversations with advisors and say, look, let's meet in the middle. If you leave me, I want you to be able to leave, because if this is not the right spot, I want you to go and prosper. I'm obviously going to have to protect some aspects of the business, but also I'm going to have to hold loosely some aspects and know that if you leave, there's going to be people that go with you, and that's okay. But let's talk about that now and come up with the payment plan, something that's fair.
That's right.
Those are the, we could go into other things. Those are the two that come to my mind initially.
Yeah, I want to sit on this a little bit, because I feel like the people listening either might be in a position where they should look for that kind of relationship to team to accelerate their growth, or there's a chunk of people listening, they're like, I need somebody like that. So for me, I just exited my first person under an agreement that I built because it was the thing I wish I would have had, that nobody owns a person, you know, and if I leave a firm for whatever reason, it could be because I need to move because somebody in my family is having a health issue. Like, it's not always that I just want to leave because I want to stick it to you and I want to be better off. Is that I said it's a multiple of whatever revenue you take on an annual basis. So if you leave,
that's what I did in my firm
that we agree on. So it's not that I own you, I own your clients, I'm going to sue you so you can't be in the business, I'm not going to make your life miserable. Because to be honest, like, I don't have the time for that. Like, if I'm spending too much time in my life trying to hurt other people, I think that there's a bigger problem there.
And clients, when clients pick up on that and they sense, like, if I'm your junior advisor for 10 years and I leave, and then they hear that Sten's trying to ruin David and keep him, now David's selling his house and like he's a mess, he's lost 10 pounds and he's stressed, and David's talking trash about Sten, that is a horrible look for you and for me. And the clients get turned off and they'll go elsewhere. I agree. I've done that for my team. It's really as simple as, hey, you're probably after 5 years, 10 years, clients are going to go with you. I'm not going to get in the middle of that. But if they do, this is an agreed upon fee that you'd pay the firm.
Nice.
And then you and I, it's good for them, because like I'd say, look, I don't want to sell my business. So it's not a good deal for me, but it protects me if you leave and all of a sudden revenue drops and I got to keep my same infrastructure and team and all that. It allows me to do that. You're going to pay less than the business is probably worth, but it's still a big knock to me, but at least I'm getting caught. So there is a win-win. And I think you and I've talked about it offline. You come up with this multiple, and that model right now, at least, is the best, most pure model I've found. No legal fees unless somebody doesn't honor the agreement.
Yep.
If nobody defames the other person, clients go, it's just, you pay this over 5 years or whatever, and they have revenue to pay for it, and it keeps everybody whole. You're able to go back to work. You're not paying $300,000 for legal fees and the stress and the toll it takes and the lost business that happens when you're in a fight.
Good point. Yeah, I think the...
clearly, I'm passionate about that.
That's what I like, man. I think the agreement takes a little time, you know, coming up on a multiple piece, but those are the conversations you want to have up front when everybody's in agreement on stuff. And so I think... trying to trap somebody again, is that the thing you want to spend your energy on? You're going to lose the clients anyways. It's really just, do you want to make it difficult for everybody, or do you want to realize that you don't own anybody? People are going to leave anyways, and it's
clients don't care about the agreement you make. They're just like, oh, I like David. I like Sten. Sten's my guy. David's been my guy for 5 years. That's it.
Yep. So I think it's one of the things. Be a place where people don't want to leave. One, I think trying to keep people with fear or legal issues. You know, we've seen that model and what it creates. I mean, people might make money in the short term and it's okay for a while, but culturally, when other people watch you do that to other people, like, I don't think it helps, to your point. Like, even internally within a firm, you're not creating a lot of rapport or being honorable if the we're going to keep people because we're going to scare them, because when other people leave, we're going to try to go out of our way for years to hurt them. So as you think about advisors, go ahead.
I was saying, no, and also you can, the beauty of it is you can make that agreement like I did with my team. And then every few years as things evolve or they mature and step up in the business, you can renegotiate those things. We've changed ours a couple of times, just small increments. Like, you know what? Now if this happens, you're going to pay less because you're really like, you know, whatever it is, like you can adjust those, but it's the key is the open, transparent conversations of me saying, hey, Sten, so I've been here 10 years now. Man, like, do you feel like I've done a great job? You're like, oh my gosh, David, I'm with my kids all the time. I'm only in the office 10 hours a week. I'm not saying I think I should, you know, I'm not entitled to anything else. I'm like, do you think like if I were, I don't plan on leaving, so can we talk about my percentage payout, or can we talk about the exit plan if I ever left? Having that conversation is so healthy and freeing. And I found with my team, we've adjusted probably every other year the comp plan to their advantage in little doses. And it was just an open conversation, and it like made them feel heard. You and I can remember, without going in the weeds, if we had gone to an employer and said, hey, you know, now that we're doing a million of production, instead of making 30% or 40%, like everybody else is getting 50, can we meet in the middle at 45? Or is there a way that we can make this, you know, X? And we were shut down on that conversation. And so just being heard, and us as advisors, it's smart of us to do that, because then we don't lose our people.
That's right.
And they're getting a percent of a higher growing number anyway. And if we're working less. So that is what I think the ticket is in those conversations, if and when you get the right people on the bus.
Yep. And for me, I feel there's a balance. I think for an employer, if somebody comes in on day one and hasn't shown any value, or that they're a stud advisor yet, I don't think you need to have that conversation on day one. I might say, hey, 2 years in, show me what you got. And then we'll start having those conversations. And so if you're a young advisor looking to join a team, your whole focus should be, it's going to be undeniable how valuable I am.
2 years. I would say, I agree. For a year, the first year or two, let the ego at the door. Make sure you have a reasonable salary to be able to take care of whatever you need to take care of, but make the focus, I'm going to blow Sten or David's mind. And after year one, they're going to be like, wow, holy crap. After year two, they're going to be like, all right, you're my guy. You're my gal.
Yep.
If you can get to that point, the good ones, the Stens and the Mees that have generous hearts and an abundance mentality, not a scarcity mentality, we are going to take care of you.
Yep.
And that is going to be very good for you. And if we're not closed-minded, and if we have a generous heart, because you're right. That's the focus. That doesn't need to be day one. Day one would be making sure like you're not just signing some non-compete or something that says, if you can't stand Sten, I love Sten, but if you're crazy and you can't stand Sten, then you're like, and after 6 months, you're like, this is not the mentor I want. I want to go to Merrill Lynch instead. That Sten isn't suing you for going to Merrill Lynch. You just want to protect yourself that way. But these big conversations are probably 2 years in, assuming you have just worked your tail off for that person.
Yep. I love that. So kind of practically speaking for everybody listening, if you could say, with all you've learned in your practice, you've tried, I'm sure, a lot of different things to get clients, overall been really successful in it. What are two practical things that you would say, from all my trial and error and iterations of things, these are the two things that you do now that are the most successful or make your practice the most unique?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'd say now, because now in the last 10 years, primarily the business has been all word of mouth and referrals. You know, the first 5 years we did, you know, paid for lead sources, cold calling, all that stuff. But the last 10 years, it's been all word of mouth. I'd say it is, I have become, and I'm still becoming, a better listener, asking better questions, running my meetings differently that are more client centric and asking the big life questions versus leading like I used to with like, here's our portfolios and all that stuff when I was 28 and wearing a suit that was too big for me and wanted to look older and smarter than I was.
Yeah.
You know, I taking all the ego out of it, and just client comes in. A lot of times I just have nothing in front of me. And I'm just like, so that, you know, Sten referred you to me. Tell me what's on your mind. Like, how do you view money? Like, what are your, like, what keeps you up at night? Like just leading with that, and getting clients to really talk about what's going on in their life. That is what has made me, I think, a better advisor and led me to referrals, because people remember those experiences. They don't know necessarily what Sten did to be. It's not because like, oh, Sten's so smart and he told me about this fund that made 13%. They left thinking, I felt heard and seen. And I can tell Sten has some years on him and he's been through some stuff, but he didn't talk about himself the whole time. But he alluded to me that he understands. That's what they're looking for. And that's an intangible that you can't always put your finger in. You and I can't train a young advisor to do that. Some of that they're going to have to inherently have. And some of it's just going to come through life experiences and getting kicked in the teeth like we did, which is going to happen to everybody at some point, but it may not happen till you're 30 or 35 or whatever. There's that balance of that, but I think it's that. And then now kind of, I say David 2.0 after the big change 10 years ago, it's been hiring the right team. And there's a whole lot that goes behind that, because as advisors, especially, we're trained to sell, meet with clients, hustle that way. We are not, we're the accidental CEO. Nobody taught us how to run a firm. It was one day I woke up, I'm like, oh my gosh, I have $1 million of revenue now. And and I've got more work than I can handle. I need another assistant. But then we're out running meetings, and then our office manager, we don't talk to him for 2 weeks. They quit because we're not a leader. There's no culture. That's a whole other part of the business, but that's not as relevant when you're first 5 years in the business, I'd say.
Yeah. So the way you engage with people is different. And then I think the idea of hiring, when I talk to a lot of advisors, that feels like version one of that is this is an expense. It's kind of a headache. I feel like I finally got to a point where I was like, no, it needs to be my priority. Like the ability to attract and keep the right people is really the only way we break out of like that solo advisor practice life to where someday I actually want to not have to be in the office every day for the business to stay open. So at this point, when I hear you talk about it, it's hiring people is not a negotiable. Like you have to have the people.
Yeah. And we're talking about today, like knock on wood, business is really our office. We have the right amount of people. We have capacity. We have unlimited vacation, work-life balance. Everything feels good. We don't need anybody. Mm-hmm. But I told the team, I was like, we don't need anybody right now. So we need to hire one or two people. Like, what do you mean? I'm like, nice. Yeah. I feel like 2 years from now, if we give ourselves, we've got the revenue. Now, this is only relevant if you can afford it. So like, I couldn't do this 10 years ago. But okay, we have the revenue. I can lower my personal income to throw another 150 grand to get the right person to start getting them really up to speed. Mm-hmm. What if we did that? So in 2 years, we're ahead of the curve and didn't do it we do it on offense. So having those conversations, because now I so passionately believe that it is the team that it takes two years from now makes our life easier. So if I don't get ahead of that, because then if I don't do it and then I lose one or two of my key players, which you and I both have had happen, then now I'm playing defense. I got to hire somebody really quick because I have a gap, and then I might make a bad hire because I'm desperate. I've done that so many times. I probably didn't figure this out till 4 years ago, and I'm 21 years in the business.
Yep.
That's 15 years of just spinning my wheels.
Yeah. Last one I want to hit on before you wrap up is, and me and you've had this conversation a lot offline. You were a very successful advisor in the asset management space, big book of business, top Raymond James advisors in the country, but then you began to implement financial planning consulting into your practice from a fee perspective. Your business, you're still at a high level on the AUM side. How is your team approaching and what caused you to be open-minded to like, I don't really need the money, but there might be another service or a way to interact with people that they're willing to pay for.
I dabbled with it early in my career with the 401k side, because there was a lot of parts to the business that we couldn't get paid on directly, but all the clients' money was in that area and we were doing a lot of work. So it kind of was like, oh, we had to, come up with a consulting fee. So I dabbled with it early there. And then honestly, Sten, you helped me a lot with, okay, how do I make this a more packaged product and actually a business model? And it was not just based on a 401k. And so I give you a lot of credit for that. And then we have, and another reason why was I'm like, at some point, what if the AUM model changes? I don't have that fear mindset. I don't think it will change. Yeah. But I think that like any business, it's good to diversify your assets. So I was like, if we're managing $1 billion and we have $5 million of revenue, why wouldn't we want to find a way to build $1 million of revenue that could cover our fixed expenses? That's more like the accountant model, like just a different, more steady Eddie kind of model. And to attract, which I'm working on now, somebody may come in with $50 million. They may be like, I've got my money with two different advisors or Goldman Sachs, but they're not really getting the planning they want. And they're just not going to move that money over to you right now. But they really see like, man, Sten's sharp. I like talking to him. He's kind of this glue that my insurance guy and my Goldman Sachs guy or gal that doesn't have, I just like him in my world. What if Sten's like, okay, well, for 10 grand, 10 grand a year, we can do 4 meetings and I will help you ask the right questions to your people. And to them, that may be a no-brainer. I found those people. It is a model that is newer, but I'm getting more comfortable with. And it allows me to be able to say, I can help everybody. You don't have to have millions of dollars. Or maybe you're an athlete that's just signed a contract, but you don't have money for a year, but they need planning. I can charge them some fixed amount. So I think it's smart to do it.
Yep.
Even though the bread and butter of our practice is AUM.
Yeah.
Thinking 5 and 10 years out, I want to keep building it kind of the way you have. So we've been doing that at a slower rate than you, but it definitely is. We have momentum there now.
Yeah. I remember going through a phase of like, do these people even exist? Because coming from AUM world, it's like people aren't willing to pay money for it. It's kind of baked in. And so now you've seen like, oh, there are these people that are perfect planning fit and they're happy to pay that fee. And the good news is the chance of you getting the AUM is probably a lot higher now than it ever would have been.
Yeah, you get to prove yourself with them for a while and you're, you know, you're usually doing the in-between work that nobody's doing. So when they realize like, well, Stan, I paid you 10 grand last year and wait, you can manage my assets too. And
might as well.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't even talked. Yeah, might as well. So yeah, I've seen that too. It's usually, it's a lot of times it's a bridge to the ultimate model that you want or that's best for everybody anyway, which is a combination. And then like maybe you get the assets over, then we drop the consulting fee because now we're getting paid enough, whatever. But it gives you just a way to say, hey, if they're like, oh, let me guess, you just charge 1%. It's like, well, we can, but also we have some clients that don't want to do that. They just want us to, they want to keep their money at Schwab and do it themselves, but they want some goal planning and monitoring and software, and they want to have conversations like an in-house CFO kind of deal. Yeah. And I love having that arrow in my quiver for sure.
Yeah, it's nice to have the option available. Well, yeah. Cool, man. Well, dude, I appreciate you. I know we could talk forever. For everybody that's listening, I hope what you're hearing is that David is an entrepreneur that didn't give up. If you met him in person, you see there's this layer of kind of creativity and he pushes the envelope. But as I got to know David more, it helped me feel he was more relatable in that like, oh, I can do what he's done too. And so for everybody listening, there is a path to getting to a very high level. It's not without its challenges, but it's definitely possible.
And to those of you listening, thank you, Stan. And I would say, listen to this guy, Sten, from day one. I knew I should have hired him, but he just had that it factor and he's continued to impress me. He has a heart of a teacher, and for advisors, he's a great advisor coach. I mean, I would have him train anybody on my team. I mean, he is, you've got gold here. I would encourage you to listen to guys like Sten. And not just try to do it in a silo on your own, the old school model. There's a lot better ways to do it. Sin and I didn't have really access to these types of podcasts and information back then, really at all. We just had to follow whoever was our boss at the time. So
no doubt.
Utilize that.
Be a lonely business.
Yeah.
All right, brother. We'll catch up soon. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you so much, Stan.
Sten here. Hope you're doing well. I want to ask you for a favor. My legacy team is growing, and I'm looking to fill a couple positions. I'm looking for an experienced advisor, somebody that can come in right away and start serving clients to help us handle the overflow of opportunities we have. But I'm also looking for up-and-coming advisors, a pair planner, junior advisor that wants to learn with me to come help level up our team, but also allow me to help them level up and scale their business quicker over time. If you are interested in this opportunity or you know somebody that would be potentially a great fit, please email us at arome@investlegacy.com. We're happy to follow up with anybody, have a conversation with them. So if you can keep your eyes and ears open, I'd really appreciate it.